The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It is a Thursday. It's great to be now on the downhill side of this week. We're making a couple of phone calls, trying to get things all set up and ready to go here on the Dave Elswick Show. A little later on in the show, I'm hoping to hear from Judd Deere, who's the communications director from the Sarah Huckabee Sanders campaign. Want to talk to him, if possible, for about 10 minutes. Don't need to talk to him a long time. But and the Demgaz has told Sarah Huckabee Sanders there's plenty of room for op-ed after being called out for bias. The Gazette published an editorial responding to the fierce criticism from GOP gubernatorial candidate Sarah Huckabee Sanders over what she alleged was liberal bias in favor of her Democratic opponent. In a piece that was titled Plenty of Room for Good Guest Columns, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette editorial page addressed Sanders directly about her Twitter thread calling out the paper for printing an op-ed written by her rival, Chris Jones, but declining one she had written in February. Quote, it said, we in the liberal media were doing you wrong. We thought our offer had this worked out with your campaign, but we know how things fall through the cracks, the editorial column read. Speaking of which, we somewhat remember your campaign pitching us a guest column way back in February during the primaries. And speaking of primary, the primary editor in this shop for that kind of stuff was out that week. So those of us left were called upon to give our 2 cents, and we decided the column sounded too much like an advertisement, so we turned it down. This ADG editorial acknowledged the Sanders campaign's inquiry as to why the paper chose to run Jones' piece but not hers, and we're going to talk about that later on today. I'll just wait for Judd to let me know when he's available, and we'll get him on, and we'll talk about this. And, you know, they basically said that her op-ed sounded too campaigny. What does that mean? So we'll try to check in and find out what they mean. All right. Now, you know that I try every year to go to Washington, D.C. to CPAC. I try to be there because everybody who's in the know shows up basically at CPAC, and they're ready to talk the issues of the day. But CPAC's not happening right now. But what is happening is that people from CPAC that work with that event make themselves available to us here to talk to us about issues that are happening during the day. And that includes a person today, CPAC Coalition Against Socialized Medicine Executive Director Jack, I'm going to try to get this right the first time. We'll see if we can. Calavatinos. Is that right, Jack? Is that close?
Oh, my gosh. It was perfect. Fantastic.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I think you're just being nice to me early in the morning. That's what I think you're doing. But that's okay. Let's talk about this because you want to talk to me, and I want to talk to you about what the Senate passed, 5150 last weekend, which is the the reduction. No, wait a second. Let me get this right, because whatever I say, think the opposite. Inflation Reduction Act, which really doesn't do that at all. It's just a really good name that the Democrats threw out there. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's what they did. They just took the name that they wanted because of inflation and put it on top of all of their left-wing initiatives that they've been pushing.
Now, I got to tell you, yesterday, did you see the president's press conference?
Yes.
All right. Did you laugh? I laughed. I really started laughing.
It's laughable if it wasn't so sad.
Yeah, and if it wasn't so serious. I mean, I agree, but to have the president of the United States and what happened yesterday for every CPI was 8.5 is what they said for July, which he said that meant we didn't have any. He said, or his speechwriters or somebody, whoever put the words on the teleprompter for him, told him to say that meant we had zero inflation. That's not what that number means. That number means you're paying 8.5% more than you did a year ago that time. 8.5% more, not 0%. It's I'm going to quote Mark Twain, all right? Figures don't lie, but liars figure. All right? That's exactly what's going on here. Tell my listeners that prices weren't flat last week or over the last month, that 8.5 number doesn't mean that. What it means is what it was, what your price for a loaf of bread last year was in July is 8.5% higher for this July, or, you know, the figures say that.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of things in Washington in terms of, like, messing with numbers, but if one high number stays the same from one month to another, in this case 8.5, the idea that a president and his press secretary would call that a 0%, that there's 0% of what that thing is, in this case inflation, it's outrageous. And the fact that all, you know, this must have gone up to Ron Klain, this must have gone to the highest levels, and they decided, let's fool the American people on this. And I don't know, do they think their base is gonna believe it and they'll take the hits that they're willing to take because there's a group of people? I don't know, but yet yesterday truly was, I mean, I thought what was outrageous was Biden shaking hands with the imaginary person again, you know, or at least waiting to shake hands again. But what you just mentioned tops even that, because we've seen the handshake thing before.
Right. We have. I've never sat in a college class, a high school class, a middle school class, or an elementary school class and be told something is zero when it's really 8.5. I mean, that's never been stated to me. And I got to believe that the American people are smart enough to figure that this went out. Although the people who are all in for Biden, and there's very few, but the people who are going to parrot what he said.
Yeah, well, maybe Peter Ducey won't be the only person to be asking the press secretary about this, and maybe some of the others will step up to the plate and do their job as the White House press corps.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
It really would be. I mean, it must get lonely for him.
You know, where's Helen Thomas when we really need her? I mean, somebody who's just really cantankerous. She was one of the biggest libs that ever lived. And I ran into Helen several times. But the bottom line is the lady, I don't believe, would have just sat there on her hands with a sock stuck in her mouth and not asked a question on that.
No, you're right. I mean, she was an institution, but I have to tell you, I had an interaction with her once that was, I went to a social event, and she was standing there talking to a friend of mine, and so I was introduced, and I had just received an appointment to the Bush White House.
Oh, God.
expressed my excitement about it was a lifelong dream to, you know, work for a president that I believed in.
Uh-huh.
And at me with this, like, you know, disdainful face and said, how could a young man like you speak like this about your excitement about working for a president like this?
Oh.
And I'm, excuse me, I'm very enthusiastic and can't wait to get to work.
Yeah.
For President Bush. And she just sort of shrugged her shoulders. But that told me everything about, you know, I mean, I didn't need to know any more about the left-wing media, but what a thing to say to someone.
Oh, yeah. But that was Helen. I'm just telling you, cynical. Oh, my God. She definitely was that. But I give her her chops just because she was there for so long. I mean, I'm surprised that they didn't really mummify her and gave her a chair in the briefing room because she was there so many years. But let's go back and talk more about the this particular piece of legislation. It comes out and we find out as things start leaking from it, which they always do in Washington, D.C., you've got all this money that's being spent on Green New Deal stuff that really is not going to have any kind of effect on our climate. We know that. Scientists know that. Scientists have even said that if China and India don't get on board a lot of this stuff, it won't matter what the rest of us do because they produce so much, quote, emissions, pollution into our atmosphere. But we're going to bite the bullet and we're going to just go ahead and build tons of cylindras and see this time if it takes.
So true. I mean, I know we're here to talk about healthcare, but
yes,
it really is a joke. I mean, how wonderful for liberals that you can come up with something like this and get the media to just all go along so that the headline of what your thing is climate, pro climate.
Yes,
like, who isn't for the climate? And they were very ingenious when they went from global warming to then calling it climate change. I mean, the climate changes, and it has for billions and millions of years. And so they get to take credit for all that, and then they get to tell us what we need to do in order to somehow impact climate change. But they don't tell you really exactly what that means, because they know in any given year, temperatures aren't going down. And maybe some years they are, and maybe an entire decade they go down. But a decade is a pinprick in the history of the world, you know, as we know.
Right. Right. Well, they, you know, they're the people who, you know, change the definitions of words. They're the people who change the definitions of things that are happening. When I was in high school and was being taught science, I was being taught about global cooling, to be exact, to be very, very honest. And then it became global warming. And then you're right. They hit a neutral term so they could say it. And it can be made into anything, and that is climate change, exactly. But let's talk about how they're trying to screw up things like medicines. I mean, they make this statement that what they're going to do, what this is going to let them do, is to really get out there with the drug companies and sit down at the table and work out a deal about the price of medicines. That's not what this is. This is the federal government saying what the price of a medicine is going to be, like insulin. That's a really good example here. $35 a vial, but only if you're like me and you're on Medicare.
Oh, you're right. It is truly socialist price controls, and that's what they're doing. And they don't want to call it that. You know, here's an interesting stat: is that American seniors have access to 95% of oncology drugs, but in Europe, it's something like 60%. And I'm sorry, I don't have the exact number right in front of me, but it's a big difference. And the same is true in Canada. So even though Americans and especially conservatives are used to thinking about European style and Canadian style healthcare as long lines or waiting for your hip replacement for 6 months, what they don't really understand, because the media hasn't explained this, is that they are restricted in the drugs that they can receive. And that's something that Secretary Azar, when he was HHS secretary, tried to talk about, which is The problem with these Medicare negotiation price controls is that it creates this list of newly restricted drugs, because the pharmaceutical company says, no, we're not going to sell it to you with this 95% tax at this lower rate. We're not going to do that. Then there's going to be a more limited amount of drugs that are available to seniors, and that's the case in Europe. That's why they don't have 95% of all oncology drugs available to them.
Yeah, we're going to come back, talk further with Jack. Got to get a break in here, Jack Payson Bills. Then we will come back and talk further, because it's like somebody making a dog out of a balloon, right? If you grab the balloon and you squeeze it in one spot, it will expand on one side, but it'll go down on the other side. And we'll explain how that, you know, pertains to the things that we're talking about here, because that's exactly what's going to happen. Insulin is going to stay the same for seniors, but if you're not on Medicare, it's going to go up. And we'll talk about that when we come back here on the Dave Elswick Show. 6:21 on a Thursday morning. We've got Jack is with us with the CPAC Coalition Against Socialized Medicine. And I'm telling you, it sounds good, but it's not. It's the Dave Elswick Show. Don't forget about PI Roofing. They're going to take good care of your roof. You know, I can say PI Roofing. That sounds good, and it is good, because they're professionals. They'll take care of your roof for you. You know, up there in the Cabot area where I live, we had a big hailstorm, and it really beat up a lot of people's roofs over the wintertime. They're still putting new roofs on people's homes. In the Cabot area, trying to fix all the damage that went down. I mean, when we had hail the size of golf balls and bigger hitting our roof, we all knew we're going to have some work done on our roofs. I had a brand new roof put onto my house. They did it. They did a good job of it. We had a little problem in the back. They came right out and fixed it. A couple of the shingles did not stay down the way they were supposed to. They came out, changed them out. Now it's perfect. And that's what PI Roofing is known for. They stand behind their work. You call them, I'll tell you this. They'll deal with the insurance company for you. You only pay your deductible or less, and they'll take good care of you and make sure it's a professional job. Oh, by the way, my bugaboo, I want things cleaned up after they're done. There's no paper. There's no nails. There's nothing on the ground when they get done. That's PI Roofing. Call them 501-707-3551 or visit them online, piroofing.com. All right, let's get back with our interview with CPAC Coalition Against Socialized Medicine Executive Director Jack Calavitinas. Try to get it right. That's five syllables. That's hard to say at this time of the morning. I'm just telling you, it really is, and I have only had one cup of coffee. But Jack has been talking with us about the reduction of the Inflation Reduction Act that passed by the Senate last weekend. It's going to be voted on, I think, tomorrow by the House, and then be sent on to the president for his signature if they got enough Democrats that are going to stay loyal on this. So I got about 3 minutes here. Let's talk about that thing about what I was saying about insulin. Insulin is going to be locked down at, I think they said, $35 a vial. That's good news. I mean, I'm on Medicare, and I also happen to be a type 2 diabetic. But if they lock it down for just people on Medicare, then people who have regular insurance are going to pay through the nose. Is that not true?
Yes. That is true, and you know, no one wants to see such crazy prices for certain drugs, especially drugs that have been around a long time. Almost all the time, what happens is when a drug goes off of patent, then the generic version comes out, and actually, all of us, you, me, everyone, 80% of the drugs that we end up taking are the generic version of the name brand, because they're off of patent and they do cost less. What we're really concerned about is the impact on R&D, because companies spend over $1 billion for new blockbuster, you know, oftentimes life-saving drugs to go through all of the trials and all the regulatory process. And then they have a limited amount of time while that, you know, drug is on patent before it goes, So as President Trump used to say, the rest of the world is benefiting from our R&D.
That's right.
They have price controls and we don't. And if we start with the price controls, then we're sort of the last of the Mohicans, and we're the last ones now that will do this, and then we'll end up with fewer access, just like the Europeans and Canadians.
I tell you what, you know, we're running out of time because we had just a half hour, but let me ask you this, Jack. I'll talk to the folks in charge, and we'll get you set up again to come on next week, because this is a really serious situation. People don't realize how this can dramatically affect new medicines not even being considered for the market. I mean, they just won't do it, and it can be detrimental to people who have diseases that need those medicines. Well, so I'm going to get you on for next week. I'll set it up, and we'll get it all taken care of.
I appreciate it. It's been a huge pleasure to be on with you, and I would love to come back and talk more to you and your listeners.
We'll get it set up, Jack. Thank you so much for your time here on the Dave Elswick Show on a very early Thursday morning. All right. So, Jack, CPAC Coalition Against Socialized Medicine, will be back with us again next week. I'll get it set up, and we will just talk medicine the next time that he's on. All right, don't forget about David Lucas Financial, what he can do for you about helping you to learn all the intricacies of buying silver and gold. Most economists now and people who help you get yourself ready for your future as far as when you retire and you're putting together a nest egg will tell you to protect against inflationary times that we have going on right now that you should have about 15% of your nest egg in precious metals, in silver, in gold, in platinum, if you do, titanium, if you can even do that. But you need to be into some precious metals. And what you need to do is talk to David Lucas Financial so you know all the ins and outs of buying precious metals. I mean, do you ask for it in certificates? Do you ask for it, you know, in real gold and real silver? Those are questions you need to have answered in your own mind before you make a leap into gold and silver and precious metals. Well, David Lucas Financial will help you out with that. They're right here in North Little Rock. They'll help you learn how silver and gold could help you protect your assets, the IRA, the 401k, just the cash that you may have set aside. They work with one of the only regulated and licensed national wholesalers in the country. So you get direct prices from a dealer that you can trust. So learn more. Just give them a call at David Lucas Financial, 501-222-3315. That's 501-222-3315. Investment advisory services are offered through David Lucas Financial, an Arkansas registered investment advisor. All right, let's move along with our guest this morning here on the Dave Elswick Show. And we're going to talk now with Nathan Meller. He's the executive director of the Center of Organizational Leadership, Master of Arts in Organizational Leadership at Harding University. And you know, we've been doing interviews with Harding for several years now and talking about all of the new kinds of classes and you know, graduate classes that they have to offer, so that you can increase your your ability to get a job better by having more education. So let's talk to Nathan about this. Nathan, I guess the first question everybody needs answered is, what do you mean by organizational leadership?
Well, thank you for the chance to be on the show and to be able to talk about this, because it is an area that we are passionate about. But when you think about organizational leadership, I was working with a manufacturing company yesterday. And so talking to them, they've got one side of the business that's focused on, you know, the supply chain. How do we get the right metals in here? How do we have the machines operating? Those types of things. And that's one side of the business, and it's obviously it's essential. But the other side of the business is the people side. How do we recruit the employees that we need? How do we get them on board? How do we train and develop them? How do we deal with team building, conflict management, those types of things? And that's what organizational leadership is focused on. It's the people side of business. It's making sure that there's a clear understanding of what the mission and purpose is and a clear plan to be able to help an individual or an organization succeed.
Yeah, well, you know, any organization, any business has, you know, multiple moving parts. It's not a static thing. It's a daily, as you were saying, if you got somebody who's working on the supply side of something, you got another side that's making the widgets, then you've got to get them out, and then you need to have the people to do all the things that need to be done to make sure that everything works correctly. So, sure, you're going to have to make sure that you've got this kind of organization set up, this organizational leadership. Everybody needs to know what everybody's doing. Is that a way of putting it?
It's exactly right. And so when you think about someone who gets a degree in organizational leadership, they are focused on the people side of how do we build the kind of culture where people want to give the best years of their working lives to a place like this one. So the one yesterday, for example, it's a great company, been around for over 75 years. But if you talk to the people there, it's not because of manufacturing that makes them want to work in this environment. It's because of this culture. They have a great place to work. People want to be a part of it. And organizational leadership people help define what that is and strengthen those types of companies.
Yeah, and then the people know what the company stands for, and then they also know how everything works, because in organizational leadership, that's the whole key. Leadership keeps everybody up to date on what's going down.
That's exactly right. And one of the things that you'll find in organizational leadership specifically, and you can learn more about this at harding.edu/MAOL, is that we have one track that really focuses on executive coaching. And in executive coaching, you're really kind of focusing someone on where they are, where they want to go. And you ask questions like, you know, who do you want to be? What are your goals? Where are you trying to go? And I say that because I have a daughter who's a sophomore this year at Harding. Last year when she started as a freshman, people asked her the best questions. What are you here to study? What are you wanting to do? Tell us about your future. And that is a question that is asked, a great question that is asked, often at the time in which people have the least information to answer that. Mm-hmm. So what you do through organizational leadership, through coaching, is help people throughout their lifetimes reevaluate what is your goal, what are you trying to accomplish, what are the obstacles, and how can we help you reach those goals.
All right, so let me ask a question that some people might not like. I mean, I would be in this group, and that is, you're the old dog, and you got to learn some new tricks. So basically, you're going to bring some older people into the system so they can understand the new way of dealing with leadership, correct?
Absolutely. So if I'm bringing something in like that, someone with a background in organizational leadership has the awareness that someone who has been doing this longer already has that neural pathway in their brains that says this is how it should be done. And so despite someone's age, they can learn to do things in a new way, but it's going to take a bit longer, not because they lack the capacity, but because they have been doing what they've been doing for such a long time, they have to unlearn to learn something new.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the training in this, one, there's respect shown. The people who have been down the road longer need to be honored for what they've accomplished and what they've brought to the organization in the past. And there also needs to be patience. People aren't resisting just because they're trying to be difficult. They're resisting because this is challenging. And so with this type of background, people come to that type of moment with change management much more equipped to understand the human element of it and to be more helpful.
Very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about who would be an ideal candidate for this type of a degree. I mean, Point to some different people that are out in the workplace right now that you might say, you know, you really need to take this. If you have this, businesses are going to look at you, or churches are going to look at you, or where, because there's organizational leadership in both regular business and nonprofits and all kinds of things. You got to have leadership for the people. How does this make you a better hire then, if you have this degree?
That's a great question. And listening in on your show, you are often talking about some of the things that are in direct alignment with the concept of organizational leadership, because the world needs better leaders. And better leaders are able to help organizations and cities and states and countries operate more effectively and more efficiently. When you think about this within that context of where would you do this professionally, you see a pretty broad range because it impacts every organization. But you'll see people who are in HR, people who are managers, people who are directors. We have quite a few entrepreneurs, people who want to be consultants. We have people from the military who are looking at, well, if I want to become an officer and I'm looking for the right degree that I can use tomorrow, well, this is a path that allows for that. You mentioned ministry a moment ago. We had three people sign up for our program who are, one is in ministry and two attend the church with that person. And they signed up to do the master's degree in organizational leadership because they said, you know, one of the most important pieces of a healthy church is that people understand leadership. And so although the minister there already has his doctorate, he came back and earned another master's degree because the challenge today is often not a theological issue, it's a leadership issue. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to be able to be better at that.
It's really interesting. You can always, always continue to learn. In fact, I would have to say that learning is a nonstop proposition for anybody. Well, when we come back, because we got to get a break in here, what's the difference between, for instance, having an MBA and this M-A-O-L? We'll talk about that, as well as if someone already has a graduate degree but would like to learn more about leadership, do you have options for them? We'll talk to Nathan Meller, the Executive Director of the Center of Organizational Leadership, Master of Arts in Organizational Leadership at Harding University, when we return here on the Dave Elswick Show. Hey, don't forget about Pat Davis. Pat Davis is out there. You heard his ad that he cut earlier in the show, and he was right on. I love the way Pat talks about it. That's why I like having him on the show at times to break this all down for you so you can understand the way he does things is totally different than what the industry does with health insurance. He can save you 20, 30, 40, 50% on your health insurance just by instituting a few things. Say goodbye to copays. That's number one. Number two, say goodbye to really, 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 really high deductibles and know that he's going to bring those down as well. Now, if you bring those two things down, you're going to save money. It's that simple. You will save money. Now, here's what you might not know. This is a perfect health plan for people who are self-employed. This is a perfect health plan if you own a small business and you want to give, your folks health care health insurance, because that is something you can offer and maybe make your company more desirable for somebody to work for if they know they're going to have some good health insurance as well. And on top of all that, you can choose any provider in the nation. Call Pat Davis. Ask him how he can save you big money. It's not little money. If you're doing it with your business, it's not little money. It's big money. It's big money if you're just doing it on your own for your own health insurance. So call him. 501-605-6935. 501-605-6935. That's your healthplanman.com. Your healthplanman.com, Pat Davis. Complete transparency here, all right? I have a brother-in-law who graduated from Harding. I have a sister-in-law that graduated from Harding. I got two nieces that graduated from Harding. I have a daughter who graduated from Harding, and I have a son-in-law who graduated from Harding. So to say that I believe in Harding and what they do is an understatement. It's a great institution, and it's been a great undergraduate institution for years, but now over the last few years, getting so solidly as they have in the graduate degree program, I really find them to be the East, you know, here in the South, they're like the East Coast schools, the Harvards and you know, Princeton's, all the rest. You've got a school that is very, very close to you that offers you such quality education. You need to take him up on it. And that's why we got Nathan Meller with us today, Executive Director of the Center of Organizational Leadership, Master of Arts in Organizational Leadership, Harding University, talking about the MAOL. So how does that degree differ from an MBA, Nathan? Give us a little bit of clarification there.
Absolutely, and thank you for that. Those comments about Harding, we obviously care deeply about the students that we work with and are grateful to be able to do that. The MBA is a fantastic degree, and for most people working in organizations, that's going to be the gold standard. Right behind that is a growing opportunity for the MAOL. It's the second most popular degree for people who are in that type of environment. And what you'll find is that MBA is designed to help equip you on the business side of business. And then it has some about the people side. Again, great degree and one that's a great fit for a lot of people. But what the MAOL does is it focuses more on the people side. And so when you're looking at that MAOL, that's for people who are wanting to be on that other side of the business where you're focusing on how do we recruit, how do we retain the right people, how do we develop them, how do we develop our strategic plan, how do we execute that strategic plan. And it's more focused on that part of the life of an organization.
So let's say you already have an MBA. It still would behold you to sit down in a classroom and get a degree in an MAOL, correct?
Absolutely. In matter of fact, right now we've got people who have MBAs already who are pursuing one of our three certificate programs. And what I'm so excited about is all of this is done online.
Correct.
It's incredible because every single class has been designed specifically for the online experience. And I say that because sometimes people had an online experience where that someone just took a class that was on ground and then just offered it online, but they did not design it for the online experience. So all of this is designed for the online experience so people from around the world can have that Harding experience where they are. But what I'm finding is that there are people who have the MBA who are wanting to strengthen the other part of their experience. And so the big transition for most leaders when they are emerging as leaders is the transition from being rewarded for being a doer, I am really good at what I do, to the transition that is the next part of leadership, which is I am orchestrating the doing.
Mm-hmm.
My job is not to just be the doer, it's to help other people be that. And so those skills are sometimes different. And so they come back and get one of our certificates. And so we have a certificate program option where people can get a certificate that is 12 credit hours. It's just four classes. But they might want to focus on learning and development or human resource management. And the one that is really gaining a lot of momentum right now is executive and workplace coaching. And so you'll find people who have an MBA already, and they are supplementing that by getting a certificate to go with it.
Yeah, there's one thing to know something, it's another thing to teach something.
And that's at the heart of these courses. Every single course is competency-based. So when you are in a class, you are learning about the idea, but you are also learning how to apply what you're doing immediately.
All right.
The studies that we look at...
No, go ahead.
Thank you. In the studies that we look at, about 20 to 25% of leadership is genetic. The vast majority of it is a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So we give people a chance to learn how to be the most effective leader they can be.
That's very cool. This is a great program. Nathan Meller is our guest. He's the executive director of the Center of Organizational Leadership. And we're talking about the Master of Arts in Organizational Leadership being offered at Harding University. For folks to get all the, you know, the T's crossed, the I's dotted, and learn everything about this and what you got to do to take it and all of that, Nathan, where do they go? And, you know, how long does it, you know, take to get into this program? And can they get in by the fall?
Absolutely. If they will go to harding.edu/MAOL, they can find all the information about this. And our team is very attentive. We are there to help you, and we are there to help you thrive and succeed. Dr. Andrea Bishop is the academic director, and she is there to assist you. We will walk this through this with you. We have Kinsey Marshall, who is a counselor for admissions. This is one of those things that you don't need to be intimidated about. We've got a whole group of people there just to help you.
All right. Sounds great. Nathan, thanks so much for being on with us today. This sounds really interesting, and it's just another example of how Harding, I believe, is, you know, leading in these educational fields. But also, these are things that when you add them to your resume, help you perhaps not just get a new job, maybe just to rise up in the organization that you're already with.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for the opportunity to spend some time with you this morning.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much. Another great opportunity with the folks from Harding University. And again, you know, I kind of hang on their side with so many people in my family that have been to Harding, gotten their degrees and gotten their master's, and some who have gotten their doctorates. Get a hold of the folks at Harding University. That address, again, is harding.edu/MAOL. So they'll help you out. I'll help you out about your car in the next hour, because Joe and Duck are here. We're going to have them sit down, and the folks from Bumper to Bumper, and we'll give you answers to make your car run better, save you some money. And that's important now, because used cars and new cars are really, really expensive. That new pickup truck that's out there, the GMC they got out there, $95,000. Oh, I'm going to go out and pick one up today, I think. It's the Dave Elswick Show. Be back in a moment. A lot of good things thus far here on the Dave Elswick Show. The first half hour, we talked about this, reduction in the Inflation Reduction Act and what it's trying to do to medicine prices. And it sounds really good. You know, they'll say, well, we negotiate it. Now, when the government says they're negotiating something, here's how it works. They come in, they sit down with you, and they say, okay, so you're charging $35 a vial for insulin. Well, you can only charge $35 a vial for insulin. There's no negotiation involved. They just tell you. That's called price controls, and that's what's happening, and I had somebody on explaining what that means. Okay, so they've set insulin at $35 a vial, and that's really good, but it's only for people who are on Medicare. If you're not on Medicare, you don't get that price. And guess what? That means that the companies, if they're having to sell insulin for cheaper than what they can afford to sell it for, they'll go to the people that have to buy it through their insurance or whatever, and they'll raise the price.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's going to happen. I kind of explained it, and he liked my explanation. If you blow up a balloon and you grab it in the middle and you push it down and in the middle goes down, what happens to the other two sides? They go up. And that's exactly what happens when you're talking about you reduce the prices artificially by applying pressure from the government. And in this case, they're just keeping the price at $35 a vial. But everybody else has got to pick up the difference. It is the way of the world. You have to understand that that's the way. And then everybody says, well, how do those people overseas get it cheaper? Well, they don't do all of the development of all these drugs. Most of it's developed by American companies. So they got to get their money back for doing all of that. The people over there in Europe, to be able to sell the drugs over there, you got to be put up with their price controls. And on top of it, they're not spending all that money developing new drugs because they found out a long time ago it's a whole lot cheaper to do it this way that's happening right now for them. So they get everything cheaper. We don't. Just the way, it's the way of the world, just telling you. But we talked about that. We talked about Nathan Meller just here in the last half hour about this new degree over at Harding University. Sounds really good. And then I'm going to talk to Joe today. Duck is out, but Joe is here. We'll talk about some different things about, you know, problems people are facing with their cars. We'll talk about some news that's going on out there. We'll bring you up with what we've heard about, you know, the chips and when we might see the chips for your cars that you're wanting to buy, the new cars. We'll talk about prices. That, what is it called, the Lightning? Is that what GM's new pickup is called, Lightning or something like that?
I'm not sure what the name of it is. Lightning usually associated with a Ford truck.
Okay, then it's a Ford.
Yeah, Ford Lightning.
You know how much?
Nah,
for the electric version?
I don't have any idea.
You load it up, you know, like people want to do? $95,000.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Let me say that again to you. $95,000. You know what that is? Mm-hmm. That's $40,000 less than what I paid for my home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess you could make an argument. I spend about as much time in my car as I do at my house at times, but still, $95,000? That's insane.
Yes, it is.
And this is how they're going to make you buy one. They're going to make you buy electric cars. They're already started it.
Well, and if they don't make a combustion engine car, you can't buy one.
Thank you.
But it's going to make a lot of the old ones and used ones more popular, in my opinion.
It's going to become and gas is going to go down. So
when they stop using gas, it'll get cheap.
Thank you. That's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Gas prices have gone down because people aren't driving as much.
Because it costs too much.
It's called supply and demand. And, you know, it just amazes me. People are just so freaking stupid in the government.
Well.
When they get involved, they just screw it all up, man. And that's what's happening.
I agree with you.
Of course, the president says 0%. 0% inflation now.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to talk about that.
Well, saying something and actually being what it is, it's two different things.
Don't believe your lying eyes at the grocery store, because it's not really going up.
No, bread, you know, it didn't go up none.
No. I quit buying a particular brand of bread because I liked it because it was white bread, but it had all the benefits of having whole grain bread.
Mm-hmm.
And I was buying it, and it was, if you bought, like, let's say Walmart's brand, it was like 89 cents a loaf.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't 89 cents anymore. My wife continues to buy it. That's what she likes. This was Sara Lee, who I was buying, and it was $1.45 a loaf.
Yeah.
I was there Sunday. It's $5.95 a loaf now. Guess what I don't buy anymore?
Yeah. I got you.
That's simple. Now I'm eating Walmart white bread. That's what I mean. And it's $1.45 a loaf.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
You know, prices didn't go up. They don't see that. You know why? $20 says ain't none of them walked into a grocery store in 20 years and bought anything.
Yeah. Remember when Bush mm-hmm. the senior screwed it up by going to a grocery store? And he says, wow, that's really cool, watching the people checking out. And beep, beep, you know. He says, how long have you been doing that? Oh, 10 years. Mm-hmm. It didn't made him look totally, totally impotent.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they get out much in the real world. They live in their own little private castle.
They got people that work for them and go out and do their shopping for them. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to be president, you got a lot of people that can go shopping for you.
Sure.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. But anyway, just remember that inflation is 0%. We're going to talk about that coming up at 9 o'clock. By the way, I got Tom DeLaRozan on. He's written a new book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics. He's going to laugh. I'm going to tell you, we're going to talk about that, and we'll both have a good laugh, just what I did mm-hmm. in the first half hour.
Yeah.
Because it's so ridiculous, and it really did bring that whole statement I used, you know, figures don't lie, but liars figure.
Well, a lot of times the wording changes, and the meaning changes with the way it's worded.
The left is notorious for that. Yeah. They are notorious for changing definitions and all of that. They've been into 1984 for a long time. You know, the ministry of love and the ministry of truth and all of that kind of stuff. Just keep that all in mind. All right, so Joe is here. I haven't got over to see him, so I can't tell you what's wrong with my car. It's missing.
Yeah. All right. You come by.
It hasn't broke down or anything. Yeah. Just from previous times it's done this, I think I know what it is. I'll ask him before he leaves, when can I come over, and it'll probably be sometime, maybe tomorrow.
Okay.
And drive by and talk to him about that. So let's talk about this whole thing about electric cars just for a moment, help people kind of put their arms around this. You know, $95,000, I want you to just think for a moment, $95,000 for an automobile. Let's just do one little exercise. Okay, the normal pickup truck that Ford makes when it's loaded is what, about $60,000?
I haven't priced one lately, Dave. It's probably in that ballpark, okay. 60, yeah.
Let's go 70, with that. So now it's going to be $30,000 more.
Mm-hmm.
So how much, and, you know, they're making a big deal about, well, look how high gas is, right? Well, they can't do that. They've stopped doing that now because people have changed their lifestyles. They're not driving as much. And, in fact, we're using over 1 million barrels of oil less than we did the same time last year. All right? Because the supply is going up, demand is going down. What have you seen on the price?
Oh, it goes down.
It's gone down.
Yeah.
I went by Sam's yesterday, filled up, $3.13 a gallon.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. It's not great, but it's a whole lot better than $4.25 a gallon.
It's only about 40 cents higher than it was 18 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're pushing the demand side down, and so that you get more of a supply, and they got to drop the prices, and that's what's happened. Okay. Well and good if it was not artificially done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happened. Again, this is the government putting pressure in certain places. Instead of letting capitalism take over, they let the government put pressure on them and force, if it ends up changing the way people drive, it costs, you know, they get to save a few dollars, but they change their lifestyle, so maybe they're not going to their favorite restaurant. So now it's not only hurting, it's helping them a little bit, but it's hurting the oil producing companies, and it's hurting maybe their favorite restaurant because they're not going out and buying a meal there.
Yeah, hurting everybody.
Yep. It just you know, that whole trickle down thing, it really does work that way.
Yeah. You know, you were
Reagan
talking.
Reagan had it pretty figured out pretty good back in the 80s.
Yes, he did. You talk about a car costing $90,000. All right, so the average man lives to be, what, 86 now?
Yeah.
So that means that when he got his driver's license at 16, he's going to drive for 70 years if he lives to 86.
Yeah.
And he's capable of driving.
Yeah, okay? If he lives to the age of the actuary charts.
And then you have a $90,000 car. They're going to finance that for what? So he actually gets to drive for 70 years of his life. They're going to finance that for 7 years. Okay?
Well, it's going to be like Europe pretty soon, 10 years.
Okay, well, my point about this is you're going to make a car payment for one-tenth of your life on the same vehicle.
Yeah,
Just think about that.
Maybe. I bet you they don't. I bet you they trade that car in and they add it to their next amount that they're paying on a car.
Then they may be paying on a vehicle or having a car payment for half their life.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. It boggles at my mind because if you pay $90,000, you're paying three times over what my parents paid for their home.
Mm-hmm.
That's, come on. Come on. And how much gas? How much gas could you buy with that extra $30,000?
Buy a lot of gas.
You better believe it. Mm-hmm. You sure can. So they've got to gin up this whole thing. We're protecting the environment.
Well, you know. There's a lot to be said about that.
Yeah, and we've talked about it.
You know, because if you look at it, if everybody goes to EV, electric vehicles, and everybody went home at 5:30, 6 o'clock and plugged their car in, they wouldn't be having any lights in their house right now because our electric grid won't handle that.
Brownout.
And let me ask you another question. So they're going to increase electrical production? How are they going to do that? Gas? Coal? Don't make no sense.
Fossil fuels.
Yeah. Something's got to generate electricity.
Yeah.
And ain't no way you can put up enough wind turbines and solar panels to do that.
No, let me really scare them. I'm going to scare people that are in the green side. Nuclear.
They ain't going to do that.
I like to say, you stand in a green group and you say nuclear. Oh, my God. Oh, 3 Mile Island. They go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They really... Well, this is why you listen to this show. I'm telling you the truth, man. This is just normal, commonsensical thinking here. It's all you need. And you figure out they've been taking you for a ride for a long time.
Well, they're just not. I just don't see it changing that quick, Dave.
I don't either. And then you're going to drive oil down even more. So let's say they get 25% of the automobiles on the road are electric, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not buying any oil. Okay, so you force down gas prices, you force up electric prices.
Yes, that'll happen.
Just keep it real here. Keep it simple. And I'll keep it real for you. Whenever I take my car into Joe's, he's a certified bumper-to-bumper certified service center. I know that I'm going to get the right kind of parts, and I'm going to get parts that have warranties on them. So if they go bad during that warranty period, they'll be fixed, and there'll be no charge for labor or anything because bumper-to-bumper does it right.
That's correct. They're a fantastic parts supplier. Got a huge warehouse distribution center here in Little Rock.
Right here in Little Rock. Not in Memphis, you know, not in Kansas City.
That's right.
Right here in Little Rock.
Yeah, they do a fantastic job. They got good quality parts. They got decent prices. And we pass the quality part and the best price we can along to our customers because we want to do the best job we can with the best part, Dave.
Yeah, and you've been involved seriously with Bumper to Bumper. You've been on one of their big executive committees. Going out and checking out these parts and how they make them and making sure that they're the best that they can get to your customers.
Yeah, well, I'm on a national council for the Automotive Alliance, and I miss that because we haven't been able to go anywhere since the COVID. Can't get together and have our normal things and talk, and you know it's a group of shop owners that's picked out by different distributors all across the United States. One guy's from Canada, and it's really good. It gives us a chance to interact with the people that actually make and distribute the parts, and then we can give our input on it. You know,
the more you
shop
know
owners, yes,
about what you're selling, the better your customer will get service, just the way it works. All right, Bumper to Bumper, we appreciate them making this part of the show possible and helping out all of the Bumper to Bumper certified service centers. It's the Dave Elswick Show. We got to get a break in. We got more coming your way in just a moment. I agree.
Yeah, there's not much you can talk about.
It doesn't tell us too much.
No.
All right, so Annie has a 2016 Hyundai Elantra. Elantra. It's a four-cylinder, 1.8-liter engine. Says, I'm trying to turn my car on a day after just using it. It won't crank. No clicking sounds. Lights and accessories all turned on, but car still wouldn't turn on at all. I tried to jump the battery with a portable battery charger thing. Still won't crank. After a few tries, I gave up. Next day, I kept trying to turn the car on, and after another few tries, the car just stopped working. The lights and accessories no longer turn on, and the car power lock won't even work. I'm not sure if it's the starter, the ignition switch, or the battery itself. Can you help me before I go take it to the mechanic? All right. I need an idea on what it could be and what my repairs will be and what it probably will look like, so I have kind of an idea on this.
Well, from the way she described this to me, Dave, what I see here is a low voltage issue. Now, you know, you could have a car that when you go out there and you sit down and you put the key in it and you turn it and it doesn't do anything. Could be because of a key recognition error. Even though the lights come on, all the lights in the inside and headlights burn and everything like that, radio plays, you know, all that stuff works.
Mm-hmm.
If it's got less than 9 volts in the battery, all that stuff will still work. But the problem is, when you stick your key in it, the halo for the security, the ECM, these computers, they detect low voltage. They're not going to function properly.
They shut down.
That's correct.
Okay.
Because what happens when you stick your key in the ignition in today's world, as well as turning it, and most people know today that if you turn the key to the crank position and let go of it, the car keeps cranking. It's going to make 8 rounds, and if it don't start, it's going to quit cranking. But that's all processed information. You're making a request to a module to say, hey, start this car. But if that module's got low voltage in it, it's not even going to engage the starter. It's not going to try. It's not going to recognize the key. You may have lights on. Most likely all that's wrong with this vehicle's got a bad battery, Dave. And it's low voltage. That's why the next day she goes out there and it don't have any voltage at all. Because definitely what happens to a battery when it goes bad, it gets a parasitic draw between the plates and it actually draws itself down inside the battery. That's what happens to a battery when it fails.
And batteries now
do just like that.
Yeah, that's why one day they may. In fact, you may go to the grocery store,
Correct. Go
in and go shopping, come back out, put the key in the car, nothing.
That's it. Won't start, won't crank. You say, well, I got lights and everything, but it won't do nothing. It's low voltage. Those processors can't function under low voltage. Anything under 9 volts, it's shutting off. It's saying, hey, I can't do my job.
Well, you've had me call you before. And I said, I need to get in there, Joe. I got a problem because I've noticed that my gauge says that it's always charging.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm seeing it's always charging, that tells me there's something wrong with the battery.
Well, how much is it charging is the question. We can test for that. We can also test the battery. There's a lot of testers out there. We don't have like a handheld tester. We use like a snap-on DTAC machine. So if we're going to test the battery, and you can test the whole electrical system with this machine, you can test the battery, you can test the starter, you can test the alternator. If you hook it up and you say, I want to test this battery, first thing the machine does, give me a group size, give me a cold cranking amps, put the proper information in there, even the temperature. And then it tests the battery, and it says, no, you're going to have to pre-charge it. Then it does a pre-charge, and you don't even have to be there. That machine will do the pre-charge when it gets through. It'll test the battery, load test it twice, then give you a printout on it. It also measures recovery rate. It's more sophisticated than what people think because that battery has got to be applicable to that car for it to charge properly. Because you put a battery in, it's too big, it's going to undercharge. You put one in too small, it's going to overcharge it. And that's the way of the world. But batteries, they're not like they used to be. They would give you some kind of warning when they were about to fail. Sometimes you get a little warning, but not much.
All right. We'll get more questions about cars when we come back here on the Dave Elswick Show. All right. Let's get back, talk more here on the Dave Elswick Show. Before we get to that, let's talk about East End Towing and what they can do for you. You know, what do you do after your car breaks down on the side of the road? Well, you call 911, right? You tell the police you broke down on the side of the road or whatever. You turn on your hazard lights, make sure people can see you sitting there on the side of the road, and then you're going to call a tow company. Well, this is the key. East End Towing understands everything that you're going to have to go through. You know, what happens after that 911 call, or, you know, or the police officer shows up? Well, if he feels that they got to get you off the side of the road, he's going to call a tow company. You may not want to use the tow company he wants to call. So you need to make sure that you make a phone call like the East End Towing, who understands the circumstances, and they come out and take care of everything, get you over to Joe's Garage or to Ducks or any of the other bumper-to-bumper certified service centers, Ken Sullivan's auto repair and things of that nature. And they know, East End Towing knows this, and they'll make sure. You know, if it's on private property, the towing thing for that is different than public property. They know all of those situations, and they'll handle them for you. They've got the answers. What you need to do is call East End Towing. 501-888-8849. 501-888-8849. Again, that's East End Towing. All right. You ready to move on?
Sure.
Okay, let's do another one here. Sarah's got a 2007 Dodge Ram, 1500 ST, 8-cylinder, 4.7 liter. We had a question like this on Saturday from Kenneth that he answered. Why do my lights flicker? I just installed some new LED bulbs. That right now tells us a whole lot.
Absolutely.
Into his truck. And whenever the truck is off, but I turn the lights on, they work. But as soon as I turn my truck on, they flicker about four times, then they turn off, but the high beams work. What's going on here?
Well, he put LED bulbs in that where it didn't have LED bulbs. These vehicles today, when you turn your headlights on, or, you know, if you set on automatic and they come on automatically and they go off dusk to dawn, whatever, you have to understand that there's a module that turns the light bulbs on. Even when you go to high beam, low beam, a lot of times the low beam bulbs are different from the high beam bulbs.
And you're not even talking about a bulb when you're talking LED.
That's correct. And the resistance in that bulb is everything, because these lighting control modules, they know when you got a headlight out, they'll put a little warning light on, and up there it tells you, you know, either rear light or front light, or it'll flicker when you turn it to the left side, and it'll flash real fast, telling you that one of the bulbs is out. Same thing with the brake lights. Well, if you change those bulbs and the resistance in the draw for the electricity that flows through that bulb, if it doesn't see the right resistance, that module doesn't know if that bulb's on or off. Does it need to what's it supposed to do?
Right.
You've changed its whole process of determining when the lights are on, when the lights are off, and so on. So these lighting control modules are real sensitive. If you just say, I'm going to buy these LED bulbs, put them in there, and put two low beam bulbs in there, it don't know if they're on or not. That's why it sits there and flickers. It's trying to find that. Is the resistance on? And then a lot of times it says, well, err on the side of caution, I'm going to turn them on. Err on the side of caution, I'm going to turn them off.
Right.
But it doesn't know, because it's not getting the proper feedback, the amperage draw on that circuit.
Okay. Without getting into the weeds, explain to my listeners what you're talking about, amperage and draw.
Okay. Anytime you run anything electronic, it draws a certain amount of voltage. That is the resistance that it's got on the feedback, because this is an automobile. It's not a house. Electricity, it's not AC, it's DC. It's direct current, which means everything that goes out of the positive side, the battery, to run anything, has to come back to the negative side. And generally, all these lighting modules, they work off of resistance to know when there's a draw on that circuit, to know when it's on and when it's off. How much voltage does it take to turn that bulb on? It doesn't take that much anymore. So what's going on? Is that bulb on or not? I don't know, because I don't have my resistance feedback from that circuit. It's like telling it whether or not it's functioning properly. And it doesn't know, because you've changed the strategy when you put the LED bulbs in there. Now, they make some LED bulb kits that have what they call little resistors that you put in with them, little boxes.
Right.
And that's simulating that, and it's telling the lighting control module or the totally integrated power module, whatever system you have, depending on what make it is, they call these all different names, but they basically do the same thing, Dave. They're looking for resistance, just like... I guess the best way to explain that resistance and draw a late model car, if you rolled your power window down, okay, and you rolled it back up, and let's just say you got an 8-year-old kid in the back seat, and he's got his hand on the glass when it goes up.
Mm-hmm.
That distance between his fingers and the top of the deal, if it meets too much resistance, which means there's an amp draw on that motor, and that module knows the length of the run of that motor up and down, and it knows how much amperage it should draw in the course of doing that. But if it meets too much resistance before it gets to the top, it automatically rolls the window back down.
That's called a safety feature.
Yes, but how does it do that? That motor amp draw went up before it went to its end of stroke. You see?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's doing that. It knows there's something in the window that's not supposed to be there in the way, obstructing it to not let it finish its stroke before the amp went up.
So the bottom line now is tell the motor how much it's got to be, and they're going to keep it lower than what it maybe should be.
When you put that, if you replace a window motor, you got to learn it. You got to teach it. I put this motor in, and you run it up and down 3 or 4 times. Sometimes you have to use a scanner on it. It learns that amp draw, how much it takes to push that window up, how much to pull it down, and if it's obstructed anywhere in between, it automatically will roll the window down because it doesn't know what's in there.
Yeah, and that way
it's a safety.
That way, little Johnny doesn't have it choke him to death.
He doesn't have some fingers pinched.
Yeah, well, that's little Susie because she's a girl and she's smarter than little Johnny.
Yeah, keep his head out of the window.
She doesn't put her head in the window. Anyway, it's good to understand how this stuff works.
Yeah, it is.
Because if something happens, you might say, "Well, okay, that." And, oh, now I know what's going on.
So your headlight bulb thing, when you put LED bulb in, just like this guy replaced, he changed that strategy. Now that module's already programmed. It knows how much amp draw that light bulb's supposed to have, whether it's a halogen or a HID bulb. And you put LED bulb in there. Okay, what am I going to do? Teach me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't get this. And there's no way to go in there with a scanner and teach that because it's not the OEM type bulb. And, you know, it'd be like putting a window motor in that is a high-speed one.
Mm-hmm.
And then expecting that module to learn that stroke, the distance of that stroke, and the amp draw up and down, it's not going to be able to do that because that is not what it was designed and built for.
It wasn't loaded with that information.
That's correct, and you can't change that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good things to know. That's a good thing to know. You know, and it also tells you why I believe you should always go to a bumper-to-bumper certified service center because they do know that. And you won't be wasting your money on buying something that's not going to work.
I've seen some of those bulbs where they'll try and put those high intensity bulbs in there. They'll take the OEMs out and put the other ones in. And if they don't install them properly, sometimes even if it's not LED bulb, if it's what you call one of those extremely bright lights, if it's not installed properly, that plastic lens that you put that bulb into and screw it in that socket, Dave.
Yes.
If you don't get it in there right, create so much heat it'll actually melt the back of the lens where the bulb screws in.
That's not a good thing.
No. A lot of times the lenses are $400, $500, $600, $700, $800 a piece.
Ouch.
Yes, and you've destroyed one because now the hole's melted and you can't put the OEM bulb back in there because the hole's oblonged and it lets moisture in the lens. You'll see cars riding around with water in the bottom of their headlights bouncing around. Once that water splashes up on the bulb, it's going to run the bulb. You can't have that. So you could actually,
I've had that happen.
You can actually cause yourself to spend a lot of money you don't need just to try and get a little bit brighter light. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's probably sometimes it's not worth it. You know, you cause more problems than you will to fix.
Yeah, not as bright as you might think it is. Plus, LEDs and any other kind of light bulb, as it ages, loses some of its luminance.
Oh, absolutely. They wear out. Takes them a while, but, you know, my whole shop is lit up with LED bulbs at my house and on Crystal Hill Road in North Little Rock. And it saves electricity. The lights are brighter. But when those LED bulbs, those 8-foot bulbs start to go bad, you can look at one good one and one bad one right beside each other, and you can tell the bad one because it starts getting dimmer because they're wearing out.
Yeah, wear out. Yeah. Just so they wear out. All right, let's get one more call in. Or a question in here before we go to our break. How about Mark? He's got a 2003 Acura. It's got a Type S. It's a TL, six-cylinder, 3.2-liter. I have no idea what I just told you, but anyway, that's what his car is. Whenever I try to push the gear shift to 5, it makes a clicking sound, and the light on the gear 5 on the dashboard starts blinking as the clicking sound is being made. Sometimes this happens to P selection too, and if the light is off while the gear is on P, I off the car. That's what it says. I guess it means I turn off the car. If I'm trying to start the car, it will not start or make any sound until I use the screwdriver to push down the button by the side of the gear and change the gear to neutral before the car will start. Now, I wish we had Gary Henry here. He would understand this a little bit better than I'm understanding it. Hopefully, Joe, you can give him an answer.
Well, sure. These, in any car, when you have a what they call a part neutral switch, it's called a Prindle, part reverse neutral drive low. That's the abbreviation for the Prindle. But if it doesn't know it's in park, it's not going to let it start. And when you shift it from park to reverse, the computers that work the transmission and the engine need to know exactly what gear it's in. And if it detects a fault in there anywhere, that light will flash. Just like he said, he can put it in park and it won't start, but he can put it down in neutral, it will. It doesn't know it's in park because it won't. You can't. The starter won't engage unless it's in park or neutral with your foot on the brake.
Yeah, that's why you put your foot on the brake.
Yeah, you have to do that in today's world. But if it doesn't know where it's at, it's not going to let it start because it's a safety issue. But if you manually push the button down and pull it down and get it in neutral and it cranks, then most likely you have got an issue with the Prindle switch. It doesn't know where it's at, so it's not going to function properly as far as starting and putting it in and drive. And a lot of times, if the Prindle's going bad, you take off driving it, it's not going to shift properly.
All right. Yeah. Keep it in mind. All right, we've got 12 minutes till 8. We'll take a break. If you got a question for Joe, it's 501-823-0965. Let's find out what's going on with the Travs. Back with you. If you got a question for Joe, here's your opportunity. 501-823-0965. It's 501-823-0965. Give us a call. All right, let's see. You want to do the Buick Lucerne?
Yeah, it's fine.
All right. It's overheating, but not constant. This is kind of interesting. I'm interested to hear what Joe has to say about this. Got a six-cylinder, 3.8-liter engine in it. Says my car will get hot within 10 minutes. The temperature will spike for about 15 seconds. Then it goes back to normal. Then it'll spike again. No smoke or any coolant leaking. Could that be just a bad thermostat?
Yes, it can, very much so. When thermostats go bad, Dave, everybody says, well, you know, in years past it was, well, they stick open, they stick closed. If it's open, it don't get hot. If it's closed, it overheats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's two things going on with this one right here. It could possibly be a thermostat not opening at the proper temperature, but it does open, and once it opens, it cools back down. Now, thermostats traditionally do not open and stay open. They're constantly working, which means when they open up and let that cool air, I mean, from the radiator that's cooled off the coolant and the coolant flows back into the engine,
mm-hmm.
that engine cools off, so that thermostat will close back up. Let it rise, the temperature rise again, then it'll open again and cool it back down. If you see one doing what she's talking about, the only other thing that could cause that would be a low coolant level. Now, a lot of times you can't check the coolant in the radiator. You're just looking at the jug over there.
Right.
That jug, you need to check it when it's cold, make sure it's full. Because if it had low coolant level, it would do the same thing. Because it's cavitating, and then when it catches the water again, it pumps it through, pulls the cold water in, cools it back down. But most likely it's a thermostat issue.
All right. Need to get it somewhere, get it checked. All right. And then they can check it. I mean, you guys don't have to tear the car apart to check the thermostat. You can do it right on one of your machines, right?
Well, on one like that, the way I would check that would be I'd be monitoring it with a scanner, the temperature, see what it is, and then I use the infrared thermometer, and I would be right on top of that thermostat housing, so I can see when exactly what temperature it opens and what the temperature of the water is going into it. And of course, this will be after checking the coolant level and everything else. And you know, if this is doing it setting still, we don't have that information. Or if it's doing it driving down the road is an important question also. If it's doing it with it setting still, it might possibly be a delayed cooling fan issue. A lot of the cars have more than one speed cooling fan. It'll come on low, and if it don't satisfy, then it comes on for the high. Well, if the low speed of that fan's burned out, the high speed comes on, but it's after it couldn't satisfy with the low speed.
Getting warm.
That's correct. Yeah.
Makes sense. And it doesn't take getting warm very much over your gauge is showing, for the simple reason that they run cars hot as it is.
Oh, they run them as hot as they can for fuel economy. And, you know, your window, some vehicles don't even turn the engine cooling fan on. If it was sitting there idling with the AC off, 100 degrees outside, it's not going to turn that cooling fan on to cool that water off till it gets 217, 222, 223 degrees. You know what's overheating? About 235.
Yeah, right, fairly close to it.
You ain't got but just about a 10 or 12 degree window. That's all you got.
Yeah, keep that in mind as well. It means it doesn't take long to get there. All right, we got 5 minutes left, so real quickly, Dalton says he's got a 2011 Ford Focus. This is a four-cylinder, two-liter engine on it. Said, recently my car started to stutter and die whenever I move forward. Doesn't matter the gear, neutral, drive, or low, it'll happen. It happens once the car gets warm. It'll run perfectly fine in reverse. It runs fine for 5 to 10 miles, then it'll happen. It'll start to shudder, then die. It starts right up again after. The problem started to occur after I looked at the radio. I removed the center console and part of the radio. It shows me that the wrench light and sometimes the check engine light. I've replaced the cam and the crankshaft sensor. I'm also replacing the computer. I don't know what else it can be other than a wiring issue. Our local Ford mechanic couldn't even diagnose it.
Well, I got a few questions, and I'm not going to be able to answer them or get an answer to them. So why did he remove the radio, and did he put an aftermarket radio in it? Mm-hmm. This is the deal. Cars today, they all have a data communication line.
Yeah, this is a 2011 Ford Focus.
And they have a data communication line, and what that means is there are a lot of computers that are on that line. Your radio and your info system is on that communication line. So let's just say you had a aftermarket radio put in it, and you didn't get it hooked up right, or you got something that's got a little bit of a short in it, or it doesn't have an interface in it properly where you can get your steering wheels control and stuff like that. I've had an aftermarket radio in my truck, and I've had an interface in it. The actual interface is on the security and on the data communication line. If that's a problem, it can shut the truck off, stop it from starting, stop this man's vehicle from running right, dying. Because when you interrupt that communication line, all the other computers are trying to talk to each other to process information to keep it running. But then you've grounded it, or you've interrupted that signal. That's probably what's happening.
All right. We're out of time. That's what the music means.
I hear it, Dave.
And Heidi can tell time, so she makes sure we know.
Okay.
Right. I know that. All right. Hopefully, Doc will be back next week. But don't forget, on Saturday, Car and Truck Doctors are on at 9 o'clock. Do a lot of the same thing we just did today. Find out about why cars do what they do. And you can do that brought to you by the folks at Bumper to Bumper right here at 101.1 FM, The Answer. All right, I'm back at 9 o'clock. We're going to talk about stagflation at 9, and we're also going to talk about the politically incorrect book of economics, like when the president stands up doing a press conference and said, it's 0% inflation. No, it's not. We'll talk about that. When we come back, we'll do it around 9 o'clock. But right now, we got to talk about your money. That's coming up next here on 101.1 FM, The Answer. We'll be right back. 9 o'clock. Let's get the final hour of the Dave Elswick Show for a Thursday underway and finish up for today. We've got a great guest coming up here in this final hour. Well, two great guests. During the first half hour, Preston Brashears is going to be on us. I was quoting from his article the other day about stagflation. I've been saying that term for over a year now. And everybody said, "Ah, Dave, you don't know what you're talking about." Well, welcome to stagflation, Carter 2.0 style. So we're going to talk with Preston about that. Then Thomas DeLorean is going to be with us, author of Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics. We're going to talk about that as well. So a lot of econ news coming in, so figure good time to spend some time talking about the economy and trying to make heads or tails of it and what does it all mean for you and for I. I do know this. The president doesn't have a frickin' clue. Gets up and says, zero inflation. BS, Mr. President. I believe my lying eyes. I'm just telling you, I go to grocery store and I know things are more expensive now than they have been in a long, long time. Maybe gas is down a little bit, but that's probably a supply and demand kind of thing. I'm thinking a lot of people aren't driving as much because gas was so expensive. So since now they got a little bit more supply because demand has gone down, we've seen prices fall some. And that may not be such a good thing either, for you and for I. We're going to talk about all of that. Let's say hi to Preston. Preston, how are you? He's from the Heritage Foundation, the think tank that I always go to nationally when I want to understand. And Preston, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing fantastic. Listen, I really like the article you wrote about stagflation. But with that said, I got to say, this new one that I read today, four reasons Biden's pitch for raising business taxes is no solution for inflation, is really good. And I think anybody can read that article and kind of understand why you're worried when you look at all the different things that are going on. But before we get into the real seriousness of this discussion, did you watch the president's speech yesterday and wonder why he didn't start off by going like he doesn't understand what's going on? Who's writing this stuff for him?
Well, it is pretty incredible. I mean, I think it's a little bit of a disconnect from the American people, who are obviously feeling inflation. When you're bragging about inflation, when inflation is in fact 8.5% year over year, gas prices are still $4 a gallon. You know, that's pretty telling when that's a point to brag on. But I also think it's nice to have them on the record now as saying that inflation is actually 0% before they enact this Inflation Reduction Act. So now we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, I gotta laugh. That's so ridiculous. I mean, as soon as I heard him say that, here's what I thought of. Mark Twain, figures don't lie, but liar's figure. That's exactly what I thought of, because my dad used to say that all the time. And that's what, look, he's asking people to not believe what they're living through right now.
Yeah, I mean, the spin is so hard that it makes you dizzy. I can't follow their logic on this. I mean,
there is no logic. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, the contradictions are just incredible. You listen to them 1 week or 1 month, depending on one data point, and they're using one set of ideas to justify it, and then they change definitions. They say, no, a recession is not actually, even though we've been saying this for since we've been talking about recessions. That's what a recession has been, is two consecutive quarters of declining GDP, and we have that. So we are in a recession. We have rapid inflation, And as you said, this is that's stagflation right there.
Yeah, look, I've lived through this already. I've done this one time. I wasn't expecting to have to do it again. You would think people would have figured this stuff out by now, but they definitely have not. And on top of that, you know, I see senators like Manchin who actually understands that you can't raise taxes right now and does it, but then he doesn't do it for a year, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere it's like a clap of thunder and he says, oh wait, no, we can do it now. No, you can't.
Yeah, it's been disappointing because it seemed like he was standing solid against some of the big socialist spending and taxes. This spending spree has been going on for 2+ years now, and it's really hurting Americans, because obviously that's a big cause for the inflation that we're feeling. So to see him backtrack, and you know, from one week to the next, the change that you see in terms of, oh no, we can't do taxes right now, Americans are hurting, to all of a sudden now we're raising taxes, and it's kind of putting your head in the sand and ignoring that. So it's unfortunate, and you know, I hope that this doesn't go through, but it does seem like there's a lot of urgency on the other side to ram this through, get those IRS agents out there get more money out of the American people, and to raise our taxes more, and to spend and give it away to their corporate cronies.
Well, it seems like to me, Preston, that what has struck the Democrats is fear. They know November is not far away. They know they're going to lose the House, and there is a good chance they may lose the Senate. So, you know, if nothing more, there's about a quarter of all of the Democrats in the House side, maybe more, that are true believers in all of this climate, you know, stuff. I mean, they're convinced, and they think this is the last chance they've got for some time to really throw some big bucks at climate change. Do you think that maybe that's what's driving them? And then they're trying to do what the Republicans do sometimes, and they'll say, well, this is going to be revenue neutral. Well, I hate that term, to be honest, and I'm a Republican. I hate it because what it means is they're going to rob you on one side and give money back on the other side. It means nothing, to be honest with you. So with that thought in mind, do you think that's what's driving them, this whole thing about climate change?
I think there's probably something to that. They think their window is short, and so I guess you make hay while the sun shines. And so I think they're, if you are a true believer, but I mean, of course, what they're doing here is not actually going to have any meaningful impact.
No, of course not.
You know, the United States is a fairly small portion of the global emissions, and that percentage is already declining. And the way they're throwing the money around here is also pretty rich. I mean, if you actually dig into this and look at it, what they're doing is they have all these tax credits for, and of course, they call these tax cuts, right? That's another response.
Yes.
These are tax cuts that they're essentially giving away money to their preferred interest groups. But they have these tax credits that are set up essentially that are designed to encourage certain specific types of green energy. But then they have these ridiculous provisions in them that basically say, well, we're going to multiply your credit by 5 if you pay union wages, essentially, or all these different things. And so if you really believed it, though, if you really believed that we have this existential threat that the planet is going to overheat, then you wouldn't be watering this all down with all this kind of regulatory nonsense that they're putting into each of these credits. You know, this is not, if you actually believe this, if you actually wanted to do this, I don't know. I guess you probably haven't read the bill if that's what you're going for.
Well, guess what? I bet you a lot of the Congress people that are over there in the House haven't read the bill either. You know, they're just going to vote what Nancy Pelosi tells them to vote, especially if you want to be part of the party. You better do what we tell you to do. Our guest is Preston. Is it Brashears? Is that correct?
Wow, very good. Yeah, usually people mispronounce that.
Okay, well, I had a good buddy in high school, and he spelled his name the same way, and it was Brashear. So I'm glad to have you on today. Stick with me. I got to get a break in. Then we're going to come back and talk some more, because you know what's worrisome for the Democrats when they read your articles? They make sense. So when we come back, we'll talk about what sense you're making. And can I ask you some questions about the other article I was talking about these, what the reasons these tax cuts or tax, the tax inflation that's going to happen, why it's not going to help anything?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's talk about all that. All right, 16 after 9, Dave Ellswick Show. Don't forget about my friends over in Little Rock here at Hillcrest Designer Jewelry. Eric Coleman wants you to stop by. Got some great items on display there. He's also got some stuff on display that he's made personally. The guy's a real artisan. He's been making jewelry since he was a kid, and he makes it and makes it well, and he saves you money, too. If you need a wedding ring set, let him make it for you. He'll save you 20-30% over what anybody else will charge you here in town. And then if you want, and you want an engagement ring that will really wow your fiance, go and see Eric. Have some answers for him about, you know, what has she kind of said that she wants as far as a, you know, an engagement ring goes, and be able to share that with him. And then he'll show you some different stones that he has. You know, doesn't matter if it's diamonds, colored diamonds, whether it's emeralds, rubies, whatever. He's got them right there. He can show them to you, and you can pick the exact stone that you want to use and talk to him about setting and all of that. And then really blow her mind when you pop the question to him. He's over at 3000 Cavanaugh, Suite E. He's open 10 to 6, Monday through Saturday. If you want to stop by and visit with him, go by those times. He'll sit and talk to you and devise some of this stuff for you. Also know that he's got a lot of stuff that's on display, made by other jewelers, and you can buy them right out of the case. And on top of that, if you have estate jewelry, he'll price it for you, tell you how much it's worth, and he can repair anything that you have. I mean, he is your full one-stop jeweler. And that's Hillcrest Designer Jewelries. Again, 3000 Cavanaugh, Suite E. Phone number is 501-246-3655, Monday through Saturday, 10 to 6. He's my personal friend. That's Eric Coleman, Hillcrest Designer Jewelry. Preston Brashears is with us from the Heritage Foundation. I would go to heritage.org and sign up for their daily email that they'll send you with all of the major stories that are impacting your life and explanations about whether it's good or it's bad. They're one of the premier think tanks in Washington, D.C. I go to D.C. sometimes and do my shows from D.C., and I typically use the Heritage studio that they have there on site, and a great place to get to the folks that that I really, really respect. Let's take a look real quickly at this article that you have, Preston. As Americans reel from stagflation, Manchin pitches tax hikes. Let's just talk about the taxes. You say they fall into three main categories: new taxes on businesses designed to raise revenues, punitive taxes on businesses designed to coerce, and an $80 billion expansion of the IRS. That makes us all feel really good after we watched them raid Trump's house, mostly meant to beef up enforcement and audits on American taxpayers. And on top of that, these guys are all going to be carrying guns. That's not a happy thought either, is it?
Not so much. Yeah, so like you said, there's a series of new taxes in here. They're trying to pitch this as you're not going to feel any of the pain of this. But
of course not.
We've heard that story before.
Yes, we have.
We've heard about how you can spend and spend and not pay for it, and of course you end up paying for it through inflation. The same is going to be true here, just a little bit different verse. You tax businesses, and you know, if you know, a lot of the taxes, for example, that they're looking at here, they're going to hit manufacturers very hard. And so if you're working in manufacturing, and U.S. corporations, U.S. businesses are being hit with new taxes as manufacturers. Well, guess what? Those foreign manufacturers are not being hit with those taxes. So what does that force these businesses to do? They look for ways to cut costs, cut labor costs, cut wages, cut employment, cut jobs. So, of course, people end up feeling these taxes that they pretend they won't. And then you have, of course, expanding the IRS. And so everyone loves a good audit. So we have that to look forward to, too.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for my personal proctology, you know, view, to be honest. And they're going to do it. I mean, look, how many states are there in the union? How many, let's just say, counties are in each of those states? And how many different IRS agents are we talking about? And so divide it around and see how many agents you're saying are going to be in each of those counties. And it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of attention, I think, being paid to 87,000 new IRS agents are the estimates that they can come up with. So that's their current number of IRS agents. I just looked this up today. I believe it's 82,000 or just under 82,000. So they're going to have more than double the current number. So this is a huge increase. And if you compare that to, you know, things like Border Patrol, the total number of recruits in the military, like, This number outweighs all that. These are huge numbers. You know, you can fill a whole football stadium with 87,000 agents. So this is going to mean more audits on small businesses. This is going to mean more audits on everyday taxpayers. If you look at where they do the audits now, about half of them fall on Americans making less than $75,000.
Oh, wait. But wait, that if you're audited and stuff and they get a few extra shekels out of you, I mean, that's basically raising your taxes. But the president has told us nobody making under $400,000 will have to pay any more taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, they have one line, if you look in the bill, on the IRS provisions where it says there's nothing in here that is intended to raise taxes. That's not in the IRS section.
Man.
And of course, Senator Crapo in Idaho, he put in an amendment. Okay, well, let's make that a little bit more solid, and let's say that nothing in here shall raise taxes on any American making less than $400,000. And guess what? Party line vote, 50 voted for, 50 voted against. So the Republicans were all in favor of this amendment. The Democrats all voted against it to make sure that, no, the IRS is not actually obligated to avoid raising the number of audits on middle-class taxpayers.
Well, it's terrible, Russ, and I think you agree with me when I say that we're in a recession by every definition of a recession except the Democrats. They've changed the lexicon all the time about what the definition of words are, or if they're words that they'll say at all. And it's just incredible what they've been doing over the years to destroy our country is what they're doing. Out of your other article, four reasons Biden's pitch for raising business taxes is no source or no solution to inflation. I'd like you just to talk about the first one. We've got about 3 minutes left. You say, one, it will make matters worse for consumers. How's that going to happen?
Yeah, so, I mean, I mentioned kind of what's happening with when you have business taxes, obviously that's going to hit the workers, but also some of that gets passed down in terms of higher prices. And so I think you've lived through this. You said you lived through the stagflation, so you also lived through the early 1980s. And so you lived through what happened, you know, in the early 1980s, Ronald Reagan came in. It was stagflation, even worse than what we're experiencing right now. And he came in with proposals to not try to reduce demand, but to rather increase the amount of supply, and to take the burdens off of businesses so that they could produce more. And if you produce more, guess what? Prices start to come down. And part of that was tax cuts. And they told him, no, you can't do this. If you cut taxes, that's going to get in the way of what the Fed is trying to do in bringing down the inflation rate. But in fact, what you saw was inflation just plummeted. So the notion that they sell that we need to raise taxes to bring down inflation, that's exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. We should be getting the government off the backs of businesses and get the government off the backs of the American people.
All right. If you want to know the other three things it does, go to heritage.org, look up Mr. Beshears and read his articles. You need to get yourself ready to talk to your friends and, you know, do the Harry Met Sally dinner table talk about, you know, health care that you did at the time when Hillary Clinton wanted a single-payer health care system, and make yourself knowledgeable about, you know, economics. That's what you got to do. You got to do a little bit of work to understand how they're trying to screw you. Preston, thanks so much. We appreciate you being on the Dave Elswick Show. Tell all the people at Heritage I love them and that we look forward to having you all back on here in the near future.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave. It's great to be with you.
All right. Talk to you later. Preston Beshears here on the Dave Elswick Show. We'll take a break for some news for you, local news. When we come back, we're going to talk about the politically incorrect guide to the economy. Final half hour, Dave Elswick Show today. You know when you got a good economist on? When you look at his bio and it mentions places like the Ludwig von Mises Institute and George Mason University, things of that nature, you know you got a good economist that knows what capitalism is and what socialism is and what communism is and why the first one is the best one and the last two suck. All right? And we've got a guy like that on now with us on the Dave Elswick Show. Thomas DiLorenzo has been on my show before. He's put together a new book. This is a part of a group of books, the Politically Incorrect Guides, and I've got all of them, and they are wonderful. They will help you have a basic understanding of a lot of different issues, this one dealing with economics. And, hey, Thomas, thanks so much for being part of the Dave Elswick Show today.
Well, I'm glad to be with you again, Dave.
Yeah, well, let's talk. It's important that we talk today because we actually had a president do a press conference yesterday and said we had 0% inflation you know, he's asking us, our lying eyes, not pay attention to the prices at the gas pump still, not to pay attention to the food prices out there or any prices when you go out and have a meal now. I went to a restaurant typically for my wife and I to eat there. It was about $35. Over the weekend, it was $62.
Wow. Yeah, I noticed chicken legs were on sale at the local grocery store for $5 a pound. They used to be 99 cents.
I know,
something like that.
It blows your mind. Yeah. And the president, with a straight face, in fact, a smile on his face, stands in front of the American people and says, "Look, man, it's under control. You know, believe your lying eyes. I'm telling you, 0% inflation."
Yeah, it was a big lie, but his own Commerce Department on the same day said that inflation is 8.5%, and there's an online group that's been around for quite a long time. It's called Shadow Stats, shadowstats.com, and they compute the inflation rate using the same formula that the government used in the 1980s, and if you use that formula, then inflation is more like 15%
yes.
today, not
8.5%.
And what Biden was doing was, you know, the inflation rate that they talk about is an annual rate. It's an annual rate, and it's the average increase in the prices of hundreds of things that the government surveys that we spend our money on. So on average, they're going up 8.5%, the government says. Well, that means, well, some 1 month, the average might go up 20%, and the next month it might go up 2%, but overall, in the course of a year, currently, it's 8.5%, and since gas prices dipped a little bit, thanks to the entrepreneurs in the oil industry coming to our rescue in a little way anyway, prices didn't raise go up much last month, and that's what Biden was referring to, but he intentionally gave the impression to people who really weren't paying attention and don't really study these things that inflation has been cured, there's no inflation, you know, don't even talk about it. vote for the Democrats in the November election and everything is good. And he knew that that was nonsense. And it was an attempt to pull the wool over the eyes of what Rush Limbaugh used to call the low information voter.
Yes. Absolutely. And here's the other thing. If it's 0%, then we don't need to pass that Inflation Reduction Act now, do we?
That's right. Yeah. And that act, by the way, one part of it is spending an additional hundreds of billions of dollars, which will increase demand in the economy. And you don't have to be a PhD economist like me to understand supply and demand. That'll cause prices to go up. At the same time, they want to tax production by increasing corporate taxes and a special tax on oil production. And that'll make energy more expensive so that everything that is manufactured in America will be more expensive. That'll push gas prices up again. And, of course, that means everything that is transported, all your food, your clothing, everything will be more expensive. And so everything this act does will raise prices by increasing demand by all the spending or decreasing supply. And on top of that, they're piling in dozens or hundreds of additional regulations in the name of environmentalism. And that'll make it even more costly to do business in America. And in one of my recent articles, I called this bill the Green New Deal in disguise.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what much of it is.
Yeah, well, it's very true. I think that the Democrats right now know that they're going to lose and lose big come November, even though we have 0% inflation. Well, there's, I say that, yeah, you know, firmly, but tongue in cheek. But they're going to lose, and the Republicans are going to take over. So this is their big last chance for a while to try to put billions of dollars into climate change legislation.
Yeah, that's the author of that Green New Deal, as I'm sure you know, is the former chief of staff of this congresswoman from New York who calls herself AOC.
Mm-hmm.
She was known as Sandy Cortez in school, but she changed her name, I guess, after running to run for Congress. But he said that it really has nothing to do with environmentalism. If the purpose is to basically destroy American capitalism and replace it with government planning. And that's the purpose of the New Deal, according to the author of it. Now, whether they will realize that is another matter, but that's their intent. And the way I see it is with the election of President Trump here and then Brexit in England and other movements like that was a shock to the ruling elite, especially in the Democrat Party in America, because they were shocked that the voters, you know, a large millions of voters actually put a roadblock in their way to totalitarian power. And so I think they decided it's now or never. You know, their lifelong dream of some sort of socialist central planning empire in America, they have to do it now or they're never going to do it. And so this, what you're seeing now, in my opinion, is sort of a Hail Mary pass on the part of the Democrats, like you said, to get as much of this done as possible. But and it's all bad. It's all from an economic perspective. More, you know, for God's sake, you know, we haven't learned the lessons about the failures of government planning.
Well, yeah. Bottom.
We need to be moving in the opposite direction of more decentralization and localism and not more centralized power.
Well, Thomas, you know as well as I do, and Rush was right when he called low information voters, and they're low information because they've gone through the public school system. I'm sorry, but they're just teaching, you know, crap down there. Thomas says, he breaks down the fundamentals of economics so that you or anyone can easily understand them and recognize when politicians ignore the realities of markets in order to sell a campaign message. And he does that with solid research, historical evidence, and, of course, since it's a politically incorrect guide, biting humor as well, and tries to help you figure this out on yourself so that when you hear certain words – you're smart enough to go, aha, yeah, I know what that means. All right, I know where you're trying to hit me at as far as this. So he'll talk about what the history of free markets on. That's why I get excited, because he belongs to the von Mises Institute and all the other things. And George Mason University, of course, there's some great thinkers have come out of there, and he's another one of that list. And we're going to come back and talk further with him. We're going to just kind of scratch the surface a little bit. You need to get the book. Here's one thing I'm going to say. If you're a homeschooling parent, you need this book. If you got a middle school or a high school student, so that you can teach them the truth. This book will teach them the truth about economics and that where we're at now and what they're doing in the political realm is not for the good of our country. All right, so let's take a quick break. Thomas, go get another cup of coffee or whatever. I'll be right back with you talking about this new book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics. Don't forget about my good buddy Billy Mack. You know, I say good buddies about all my people that advertise with me because I do. I know all the owners, and they're good friends of mine. And they're good friends of mine because they're honest, hardworking people that will deliver the product that they promise you the way it's supposed to be delivered, and you'll be very, very happy with it. I've lost advertisers before because I said, you're not doing what you said you're going to do. Oh, well, I just say that to gin up sales. Well, you don't do that on my show, and I'm not going to do it and ruin my name by telling lies for you. That's not going to happen. So over the 23 years I've been here in Little Rock, I've lost two advertisers completely. Never will have them on my show again. But Billy Mack, man, he's going to be on with me until Jesus comes back. I'm telling you, because he does it right when it comes to taking care of the security of your home or your business. Name of his business, ICU Protection, and Billy Mack is the owner. Here's what he's going to do for you. He's going to put in the necessary door and window sensors, indoor or outdoor cameras that you need, the doorbell camera if that's what you want, motion detection, and this is for homes and commercial property, business or residential. Know that you're going to pay for the service. I mean, that's how Billy Mack and the people he employs make their living. However, here's the other thing that he'll do. He'll not charge you for the hardware that he's going to put in. I mean, you go with some of these other security firms that use letters in their names and stuff. They'll come out and you'll tell them what you want done, and they say, well, for $650, we'll put all of that in, and then here's what your monthly fee is going to be. Well, talk to Billy Mack about that. And I've had people say, well, Dave, you know what he does. He just ups his service fee so that it pays for that hardware. Well, let me tell you what. When you take a look at the price that ICU Protection does for their service and it's under everybody else, you're going to say, well, how's he doing that? Because he's smart. That's why. He understands markets. He understands how it all works. He can take a pencil and add and subtract and figure it out. And you will be the winner for it. You're going to get a great security system for your business or for your home. And you're going to save money at the same time. You call ICU Protection and talk to them about it. I've got this system at my house. I love it. Every door, every window is protected. I've got two cameras on at my house. And I can see in those blind spots that if you're a thief, I'll see you. Just let you know that. And I'll see you on my smartphone because that's where it delivers the pictures. Call them at 501-205-1333. 501-205-1333. And remember, pay for the service, not the hardware. We're down to about 9 minutes with Thomas here on the Dave Ellswick Show. He's got a new book out. It's called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics. And let me just ask some general questions that I'm sure that you hear all the time if you teach a class, Thomas. You'll hear folks say that capitalism amounts to, and we've heard this, and they always quote from Wall Street in the 80s, greed is good, that capitalism amounts to greedy, power-hungry corporations only enriching those at the top of them. How do you respond to that to your students?
Oh, well, I educate them, for one thing. Socialists of the world have been singing that tune for hundreds of years now. It's unequivocally not true. A good example of capitalism is the TV show Shark Tank. And, capitalism, Adam Smith, the author of the famous book, The Wealth of Nations, it was published in 1776, the year of the Declaration of Independence. His definition of it was, give me that which I want, and I will give you that which you want. That's capitalism. And it was a whole new thing in his day, emerging from feudalism. But basically on Shark Tank, this TV show, you have ordinary men and women who have an idea, a business idea or a product or a new service, and they've sold a little bit of it, and they're making a pitch for funding from these high roller investors like Mark Cuban on the show. And basically what they're doing is they're figuring out, how can I make life a little better for my fellow man and make money doing it? And a lot of them have succeeded. The most successful product is this sponge called Scrub Daddy. You can scrape the fried chicken off your frying pan with. It apparently works really well, and they've made millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I remember seeing the original show. It was this little old lady who just had trouble. She's sick and tired of trying to scrape the fried chicken off her frying pan, and she became a millionaire by doing it. And so, even the big corporations all started out small. Bill Gates started out as a computer nerd in his dad's garage in Seattle, Washington. And John D. Rockefeller was a pauper, and he was a hard-working, very smart guy. He saved every penny. And 1 year after the end of the Civil War, he had accumulated $24,000 in savings, and he bought an oil refinery with that much money. And that's how the Standard Oil Company was created. So, yes, he became very wealthy. But in the meantime, he employed hundreds of thousands of people and created a good life for them and cheaper products and more products, hundreds more products.
Yeah, what I like about Rockefeller is when he said, I didn't get involved in politics until politics became involved with me.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. The same thing happened with Gates, that he thought he could just stay in Redmond, Washington and work on his computer business until Congress started investigating his company and calling him into Washington, D.C. to testify. And then he didn't open up his lobbying office until that happened. He's in business for 20 years before he even hired a lobbyist.
Now, with that in mind, I'd like you to talk a little bit about this, because a lot of people don't want to talk about it, especially college students who have been propagandized over the years about how terrible capitalism is. The Soviet Union, of course, is the most recent and obvious example of how socialism in people's lives fail, and people have heard so much about the Soviet Union and Russia and whatnot, and we can throw Venezuela in there as well. A lot of people now are very aware that people who had a whole lot of money over in Venezuela now, because of the socialist policies, are eating dog food out of a can. So when you show those kinds of examples to people, does it resonate with them, or are they so propagandized now that they're sold, they're sold to socialism?
Well, my students, learn these things, and I have videos from friends of mine from Venezuela who are economists who have made some nice videos, very educational videos, and I used to teach a course called Capitalism and Its Critics, where I would have them read some Ludwig von Mises, and then I would have them read the Communist Manifesto next to that, just back and forth, so that they would get both sides and they would understand these things. And I was also having them read such things as there's a sociologist named Rudy Rummel, who taught at the University of Hawaii for many years, and he documented all the deaths in under socialism in the 20th century, the Soviet Union, China, North Korea, and everywhere. And typically the students would come into my classroom and never heard of any of this. And these were usually 19, 20, 21-year-old students whose parents had been paying $50,000 or $60,000 a year for them to get an education. They had no knowledge whatsoever of this. They knew nothing about Venezuela, Soviet Union, hardly at all. But they did after they took my class. And they appreciated it. And a lot of them would react by being sort of angry that they had been miseducated and embarrassed that they didn't know these things. And because I would give them very good literature to read, and it was undeniable, and they would finally learn these things after all these years of what they're usually taught about socialism as sort of the utopian dream. They're never taught the reality, but in my class, they always were.
All right, well, let me finish up with you. We've got about 60 seconds. What can the average person do to understand about economic freedom? Because it's the consumer or it's the citizen of America that's going to make it whether we follow capitalism or we don't.
Yeah, the theme of my book is be your own economist. Don't rely on the talking heads on TV so much, or New York Times, Washington Post. Educate yourself. And that's the purpose of this book. I explain free market economics, why markets work, and I explain why governments don't work in it. And I do it in plain language, you know, in the spirit of the Politically Incorrect Guide series. And I recommend dozens of books, and they're all in little boxes that says a book you're not supposed to read. And every one of these books that I pick is well written, many of them by well-known authors, in plain English, with minimal jargon, minimal, you know, academic jargon. And so you need to educate yourself and your kids and your grandkids and to be a better citizen and to understand what's happening in the world.
Thomas,
that was my purpose.
I appreciate you. It's been a pleasure to have you back on. We'll do it again soon. And I suggest if you're homeschooling your kids, you get this book for sure, and you use it as a textbook. I'm Dave Elswick. Thomas, I'll talk to you down the road a little bit. The Politically Incorrect Book on Economics. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., right here at 101.1 FM, The Answer.
General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.